Okay. I'm not going in though. You be on your own.
Sorry.
Yeah, you start the whole thing, do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Might be enough. Okay. Yeah.
Let's just do that. Sorry about this, folks.
So how's everybody doing this evening? Let's just go around here and get to know each other. What's your name, brother?
I'm Jim.
Okay, you're
Carl.
Carol.
Debbie.
Nancy.
Karen.
Oh.
Leanne.
Judy.
Joseph.
Tamara.
Barbara.
Jesse.
We got
Ann.
You're doing great.
This is Pilar.
Hi.
Pilar. Pilar and I got married February the 1st.
Oh my gosh! Congratulations! Why are you hiding these things from us?
Total whiffle. Today, 6 months.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations. Wow.
And Pilar has, and I'm very happy. I'm extremely happy. And it's a joy to introduce her to you all. Because a lot of you know me, seen me for some years now, since I was always single. Even with a woman, I was single. But then when you get a wife, it's different. You know what? You follow what I'm saying? With a wife, it's different. So all that singlehood that I've been trying to hang out, I just keep get rid of it. So I'm coming closer and closer and closer and closer. So I'm extremely happy to be able to have lived so many lives in such a, I would say, a short period. So I'm very happy and honored to be here and to be honored to be here and to see this beautiful woman whom I love dearly.
All right. Well, that's the introduction that we wanted to have and might not have gotten otherwise. So so thank you, technical difficulties.
So we roll it.
When you have lemons, you gotta have lemonade, right?
That's right.
So we are rolling, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Kenny Johnson back to Many Rivers.
Mm.
It is always a treat when he comes,
yes.
And it's already been a treat so far, and
yes.
We expect more tricks and treats
yes.
tonight. So welcome, Kenny.
When I met Gangaji, it was years ago, and I remember when I first started doing talks, satsangs. I asked her, I said, Gangaji, I said, how should I present myself? Should I write out a speech? Should I do a lot of research? You know. She says, go in empty. And so, coming in empty with no idea what you're going to say, how you're going to say it, for me, for the first year or so, was really quite, it was beautiful and scary at the same time because I ran out of material after about 90 days. Because I still was trying to copy, emulate somebody else, you know, this person, that person. So I was trying to emulate their style. Should I do the Enneagram? Should I do Byron Katie? Should I, you know, emulate Papaji, Ramana, you know? Well, I mean, that's just, you know, Gangaji, you know. And so I walked away from satsang. I said, I'm done. I got me a job driving a limousine. I said, cool. I don't have to be a guru. I can just drive my limousine for the rest of my life. That lasted about 5 years, and I said, okay, now what? I got a job washing windows. And that lasts about 90 days because it rains in November. I hadn't made enough money to go to Bali or Hawaii, so I was back to hustling, you know. And so, some way, somehow, I meandered my way back to start doing small talks. But then when I came back, it was a few years later, it was in 99 when I did a few soft songs and I stopped. Then after the limousine business, then about 2005 or something, before I started doing prison work, and that's when I would say cut my chops, because I was going and working with prisoners all the time and sharing my experience and having an audience, a captive audience, always helps. They couldn't go anywhere, you know. And so I kept working and kept working and kept working over years with them, and I realized that talking to people who are suffering, who are facing death, and who don't want to hear you, don't understand what you're talking about, was really a major, and it was a major challenge. Today was the first day I just said, okay, forget all this. You don't understand, you're going to understand. Because I'm going to use every symbolic message I can to get the point across to you. And one of these might work for you. You know, so working with those who don't understand Satsang at all is really a challenge. You all are easy. I mean, seriously, you all. You know, you've been here, you've been around the block a couple of times, you know, you meditate, you be nice, and you shake your head and all that kind of stuff. You know, they don't do none of that. Matter of fact, they start talking to you, they be over there talking. Like, shut up! Okay. And I just let them talk, you know. I was like, okay, maybe this person listened to me. And so now I do talks out here. So it's been a while now. So now I don't even try to promote myself. I don't try to, make you get it or nothing like that. Or, oh, please listen to me. I want to be like, you know, Gangnam Style. I want to have 100 people coming and kissing my feet and all that. That's not going to happen. So I'm just happy now just being available to whoever shows up, however shows up. And those incarcerated really need to hear this message more so than you all. Because you have the liberty to go to these foreign countries and sit at these most wisest people speak. They don't have the liberty to do that. So it's through your wisdom, your searching, your seeking, your supporting of teachers like myself and other people, that makes it possible for those who would never, ever enter one of these halls get it. By people such as myself going in. So, I just want to say that your energy, your love, your support, your doing the work is not in vain. Yes.
conversation. It just amazes me.
How so?
Oh, because it doesn't make any difference whether you're talking or not.
That's right. That's
it's the same thing.
The same.
It's just going on. It's just happening.
That's right. And if you wrote it all down to put it on tape and try to remember the concept, you have to let it go sooner or later anyway. So. You know this. We know this. You have to let it all go anyway. You have to let it all go. There's nothing you can hold on to. I was telling the minute that I said, listen, I said, you all want to know how to be hustlers and players and pimps and bank robbers and everything and how to have healthy relationships and all that kind of stuff and use drugs and everything. I said, guess what? You have to let that go. You have to let that stuff go sooner or later. You can't become a dope fiend the rest of your life. You can try to, but you come back a dope fiend and start again. If you try to be a pimp, you can get pimp so old, then you get too old, women don't want you. So that career ain't gonna last long. You have to let that go. And Ganga Ji, she, I love her when she would be in South Sun, somebody right in front. She said, give me that, please. Yeah, and she'll take it. Thank you. Yeah. Because the person is doing more thinking than trying to conceptualize, which I can't be conceptualized. This cannot be conceptualized. The Buddhists have written down everything and they have categorized and tabulized and titleized, and guess what? After it's all said, the Buddha says you have to let it all go. That's one of the four noble truths, am I right? Let it all go. And experience nirvana. You would ask, where are you now, Kenny, in your walk with consciousness? Just where are you now? What comes up in your consciousness day out throughout as you're doing this dance with consciousness? What comes up, Kenny, day out, day in and day out? You would ask that, wouldn't you, Jim?
Sure.
Of course. And he would ask it, too. He would ask that. He might ask it, too. After I even explain it, he might say, well, Kenny, wait a minute. Yeah. Where am I right now, this day? And the Bible says, Paul says, I die daily. This is where I am. This is where I am. Experiencing death of this mortal body, of separation from my beloved. The reason we don't want to love because we don't want to open up to the fact that death is right there next to the love. We don't want that. We want the love but not the death. You would ask that. I mean, is that makes sense? So, what doesn't it? So, what do? We don't really get into deep, heavy relationships. We just can keep a distance. Because I might really fall in love with you and don't want to see you go. And guess what? Your attachment to this frame, to this person, gets stronger and deeper, and the stronger and deeper you get, guess what? The more closer you get to death. No, I'm going to have to let this go. That's why I never really committed to love or relationship, because I did not know. Unconsciously I knew that I'm going to have to experience the let go of this. Because why? You cannot become attached to these physical things. You can. But you're going to have to let them go. And sometimes they're going to be ripped from you. Or sometimes they might just slowly slip away. So I am dancing with death. I never wanted to, never really connected to another human being. Because I didn't want to feel the love of that person. I want to feel the love that's in my heart, the love that's in this other person. I don't want to feel the love there. But you never live until you love. So do not leave this life without love. Deeply. Some of you had pets, and that pet was the most loving, and when it died, what happened? What was your experience? Who had a pet that died on there? Boom, 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 boom. And how did you feel? How did you feel?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's awkward.
How did you feel?
First pet I had that died really broke my heart.
Yes.
But I was doing spiritual work at the time and got more into it. And one of the things that resulted from that pet dying was that I vowed to myself I would try and learn to understand animals better and to treat them with great kindness,
yes,
because they weren't going to last and neither was I. And so it was a lesson. And then the next pet, I've had lots of them over the years.
Right.
The next pet, I just understood. Here it comes, this is what's happening, I just loved him to pieces.
Right, that's right.
Gave him what I could.
That's right. So love. Love totally, completely. Uncontrollably, that's love. That's why we're here. Is to become so attached. Why did it say the Buddha, it says attachment is suffering. Why would it say, of all the things to put out in the world, he said attachment causes suffering? Because he knew that we're supposed to become attached. We're here to become attached and to experience suffering and then to experience the letting go of the suffering and to experience nirvana. So suffering is a part of it. And so for those who have loved, and you had a pet, you loved it, then after you died and you had your experience, what was your experience after, what was your realization, your insight after the death?
I helped a cat die. We were with the cat when she died.
Mm.
And she taught me something about,
what was that?
Letting go.
Mm.
That it's all right to let go.
Yes.
It's a process.
It's a process. But we can't jump over into nirvana. We have to go through suffering. Mm-hmm. Ain't no way out. You can try to. And Jesse, what was your experience? You had a pet, right?
Well, it wasn't my pet, but I gave it to the pet.
What was your experience? However you want to wiggle around with it, what was your experience?
I guess part of it was heartbreak.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was also some disconnection because I wasn't in that pet's life, whole life.
Right.
So it was like trying to understand.
Right.
But also a release.
A what?
Suffering towards the end. So it was like the surrender.
Yes.
There was a real
lesson. Yes. 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 Yes.
I think for me, maybe it was kind of in stages, and I don't want my friend. I mean, for me, my pets are not just my pets.
Right.
They're my friends.
That's right. That's right.
And a part of my life.
Yes.
So it's really for me, my own selfishness. Mm-hmm. One cat in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want her to go.
Yeah, right.
Because I would miss her.
That's right.
And of course, that's a selfish thing for me. But I also understand, and she did her kitty thing she had to do and moved on.
That's right.
And I still have her with me.
That's right.
And wherever we go,
that's right.
She'll be.
That's right.
I think relationships.
Right. With that. Today, a young man, he asked me a question. He says, Kenny, why did all this happen? I said, man, wait a minute now. He ain't going to throw that one on me. We got 5 minutes. Don't throw that on me, man. Not right now. Man. That's a whole nother subject. I said, I'm just going to throw something at you. I read a lot of books, mythic books and fairy tales and legends and all this. And I will say that consciousness at one time, if it's true, was at ease, was at peace. Needing nothing, wanting nothing, desiring nothing, knowing nothing. Just consciousness. And decided, I want to have some fun. I want to experience myself in so many different ways and so much pain and suffering because I know I cannot lose myself anyway because I'm conscious. There's no way I know everything. I just know, but I can have some fun with this. So I'm going to have Earth. It might be 1,000,000,000 Earths. Who knows? It might be 1,000,000,000 of us. Earth, constellations, galaxies, whatever else. So I'm just going to have fun with this. And experience myself in all the different aspects, all the different emotions and feelings because I can't lose myself. Now, I would tell him this tomorrow, but I could not tell him that in 5 minutes, and everybody's around, you know, I'm like, so I'm telling the whole class tomorrow, like, no, this is why you're here, and I'm going to give them a lesson on why they're here, who they are. And so, it's my experience, of my spiritual, understanding that we as spirit, we're at rest. And spirit decided to become not at rest. Here we are. Got guys walking down the street with a skateboard. Just been to the skateboard park. Cars flying down the street. People sit here listening to some guy talk about consciousness. It's all a play. But it's so real. It's so real. Whereas we each think that we are running the show, we are doing it. It's so real. And that's where the suffering comes from. Because you forget where you came from. You forget who you are. That's the whole purpose, is to forget. So we can have fun. And suffer. Sweat. Why did you come here tonight? What prompted you? You was what?
I've been here before 7 times to hear you speak again.
Mm. Hi, friend.
Hello.
and you, so you came on her suggestion.
You bet.
And it's been about how many minutes now, Mom? how's this going so far for you, darling?
That's great. Especially when you bring the animals into the dialogue and our connection.
Yes.
I try to
Yes. Yes. Okay, talking about animals, I got a story. Sunday, I was about to drive to Sacramento. And I went to my car, and I jumped in my, and I told my wife, come on downstairs, and I went down to the car to get something, and I was walking to the car, and I felt something, ding! And I instantly knew it was a bee that stung me. And it just like, it's like, it just put their whole, you know. My buddy said, my black buddy from Oakland, he says, Kenny, did that bee had a fila suit on and a little cap and some high heel shoes on? Because that dude was pissed off. and that bee was, because, you know, the bushes were like way over there. And I said, why we come way over here? And say, bing! I wasn't threatening nobody. I was in a concrete parking lot. So this was just an angry bee. Just pissed off. And have you been stung by a bee before? Okay, and so it's right here in the back of my head. And I just do, and they say when they do it, they leave the stinger and the butt and the abdomen and a whole bunch of other stuff up in there. Then they die. See, death. You know what I'm saying? I said, oh man. I said, this ain't gonna be a good one. But I'm gonna tough it. I'm gonna tough it through. You know. I said, I'm going to buy this car. You know. So I get in the car and we're driving. My wife, she's looking at me like, you okay, honey? I said, yeah, I'm okay. I feel something going through me, but I'm okay. You know, I'm driving. So we get about half a mile. She said, honey, you okay? I said, yeah, I'm all right, man. I'm going good. Oh, she said, ah! She started crying. I said, what? Your nose is blowing up. My nose and hives on my face. I'm saying, she said, honey, let's go to the hospital. I said, I'm all right, baby. We're going to be all right. I feel it, but I'm okay. I got by on A Street. I said, shit, let's go to the hospital. I turned the car around, got to the hospital. And so I'm like, now I can't breathe because it's, I'm sitting there. And she talks, she says, my husband, I got about to come to be. He's our reaction. And they're saying, what's his name, man? She said, Kenny, he's big at him. I'm like, he says, does he still live on Keaton Avenue? She says, what does that have to do? He's a king. She says, calm down. Don't worry about it, ma'am. Now she's crying. She's really out of it now. Like, and I'm just listening to this, and I'm just gasping for breath. Like something just won't. I'm going to open up, but it's getting closer and closer and closer. I said, oh, boy. She was reading about it on the car. She says, you should have these reactions, this and this. And I was having them all. I said, oh, man. So they finally get me into the room. They put the thing. Now I got hives all over here. I'm itching and I can't breathe at all. I'm like, oh man, this is not good. I said, you can die from this. I said, oh boy. So, I said, well, I had a good life then, so I got to go like this. I don't want her to suffer too long. But then they finally came and said, well, we can give you epinephrine, you know, or Benadryl. So she had the epinephrine pink ready to. He said, no. Let's give him the pill. Thank God they didn't give me the epinephrine. I didn't know that killed you too. If you got high blood pressure, it raises your heart, boom, you die. So thank God he was a smart doctor. He said, give him the pill. Give him the Benadryl about 20 minutes later. I said, we can go home now. I went home and I laid there, man. That finally Benadryl kicked in. I said, but that little sucker is still is working on me because back of my head is still kind of swelled up. And, you know, see, this is a setup. It was two of these dudes. About 3 weeks ago, one hit me on the leg. You know, it is a little knot, and that was it. They say the first one ain't the one to get, it's the second one. And so he said, if this doctor, the nurse is a very, David, he was a very, very good nurse, Humpilar. He says, what happens is the second one then comes and your body goes into full attack mode. So the body is doing its job to save you and at the same time killing you. Because all the energy now is going to where the poison that wherever that stuff is at. Called militin or something like that, that was released into your body, that was them bees have. And so, I showed a picture of me to my students. They said, wow, man, look at your nose. I already was big. Look at it. That, wow, it's a big old thing. I showed it to them today, you know. So they didn't think I was just trying to, you know, get out of teaching, you know. And so, something so animals can be, you know, animals can be the most sweet and loving, and that they can be the most dangerous things in the world. They can take you out. They can actually take you out. I've seen a bobcat in the wild. Have anybody seen a little bitty bobcat in the wild? Those dudes are. I mean, when nature is wild, I mean, it's wild. I mean, like, I said, wait a minute, this bobcat ain't backing up. It's like, if you come any closer, I'm going to show you how tough I am. It wasn't giving any ground. So, you know, animals, you know, the ones you have domesticated pets, they can be nice and sweet, but they can also be very dangerous. For the longest, I would let bees eat off my plate, you know, because they come and get the meat, you know, eating. You know, I let them eat up my plate, and I was like, ah, now, oh, man, I highly respect bees. I even read up on bees. I even have a mat now with a bee on it. When you walk through my door, there's a bee. You know, I hurry up. The next day, I was downtown, I was walking. I said, a mat. It's got a bee on it. And I put it right in my front door. So I walk. I was always a reminder. The bees give you everything. They produce more honey than they need for us. So now I don't do sugar. Guess what I do? Honey, of course. I mean, because it's the message there. You know, you get stung twice. Michael Mee said, when something happens twice, pay attention. So I said, well, I got stung twice by a bee. Okay, I've been doing too much sugar, high blood pressure, so let me switch over to honey. So now I do honey. So I'm you know, I'm really honoring what happened to me. And really realizing that there's a message from consciousness for me to pay attention to the bee. Even in the Holy Quran, they talk about, there's a whole section about the bee. It's called the bee. And it's all about how Allah, the most merciful, most beneficent, you know, brings everything here for our benefit. You know, the cows and animals, everything is here for our benefit. No, a cow produces more milk than it needs for us. And the sheep produce more wool than it needs for us. To put in our cars and sit our butts on it and say, I got a sheepskin seat cover.
I read that if bees were gone, human beings would die in 4 years.
In 4 years. So I honor that. I honor the bee now. I don't honor the bee. I honor it. Because as you look around, it's pollinating all the flowers. It's making everything. So, wow. And we live in a complex where some master landscape artist created to where as the seasons are changing, guess what? There's always something blooming. So bees are always there. They are never away. The trees do their thing, then the flowers do their thing. So I don't know what's coming now, because the trees are going away, their little flowers, so I don't know what's been really, but then I've got these big old purple flowers that hanging things, they big, skinny and big old thing, I don't know what they are. Bees are hanging out there now. So the bees are always in our complex. And I just thought, oh yeah, bee. Now I really pay attention and honor the bee. such a small little creature, but yet it's so very necessary for us. We're living in a very fragile environment. If one thing was taken away, we probably would just be long gone like that. If the water got polluted, guess what? We're done. We're dead dogs. There'd be a few of us that would adapt and live. I had no idea I was going to have a conversation about animals and bees and cats and that and such. Questions? Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm here because Leanne gave me a copy of your book.
Oh!
Which I totally am enjoying very much.
Thank
my
you.
Partner took life coaching in the federal prison in Colorado.
Okay.
She was asked to come to San Quentin.
All right.
And but I'm about halfway through with it, and I'm curious about, and I haven't read it completely, but I'm curious about the relationship with your grandmother when she took you away after you took something from her and she took you back to mom. Do you ever have any more relationship with her?
Oh, yes. Yes, you haven't gotten there, I assume. But I went back. I was on the run. I escaped out of prison. And I've been out about 2.5 years. And I was just tired of being on the run. And I was just exhausted. And so I thought about grandma. So I jumped in my little raggedy car and I drove all the way down to Arkansas. I didn't have any money. I was broke. I was just exhausted from hustling and running and lying. I was just exhausted. And so, it takes a lot of energy to be a hustler, first of all. It takes more energy to be a hustler than to be a square, I have discovered. And so, I got down to Arkansas, and I pulled up in front of the house. I hadn't seen grandma in years. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was 10, 15 years. And I just, hey, grandma, how you doing? Hey, boy, what you doing here? I just come to hang out and say, hello, Grandma. So I came in, she gave me a little cock, and it was all right. Then she called up, what that boy doing down here? Well, you know he's running from the FBI. Oh, boy, so. So I was there one day, I was 2 days, so I would walk out into the country, into the woods, and this, you know, and I would go hang out at the little club. They had one little club in Star City, and they'd tell all kind of stories about my grandma and everything. And then I would, you know, go to grandma and I go sleep. And then one morning, this is amazing. Grandma came to me early in the morning. Kennedale. Yeah, grandma. Pack your stuff, boy. Go. Get out of here. Huh? Leave. I got up, got my stuff, took my car, and drove away. FBI came a matter of days later. I mean, I don't know how, but they came a matter of days later, and I was gone. I was back in the thick of it. I was ready. I needed to come in this to connect with her, you know. Then I didn't see her no more until 1992 when I got out of federal prison, and then she was 94, 95, 98 years old, something like that. She was old. She had a stroke, but she still was mean. She still was mean. That never, okay, that stroke didn't take no meanness out of it all. She just said, she still was mean. You know, one half couldn't move, but the other half, she still was mean. Grandma was mean all the way to the grave. And she died in 1992 or 3 or something like that. But she lived to be old, and she lived a fulfilled life, a full life, you know. My mother now is in her 80s, and like she could be around another 20, 30 years. Like she ain't going away anytime soon, you know. So we have a longevity gene in our family. My father, he died when he was 66 years old, so I have that side, you know. So I hope I got my mother's stuff going on, because I'm 64 already, you know, and I just got this beautiful woman over here, and I want to be around about 90 years, you know what I'm saying? I ain't ready to go nowhere anytime soon, you know what I'm saying? And so, and I want to say I had the most healthy relationship with my woman, because you know, I never thought I could really be, you know, loving, excited, you know, always loving her and appreciating her, and wanting to see her and talk. I had no idea that was possible. You hear everything just, that ain't real. Somebody's making that stuff up. You know, that ain't really real. You can't really love somebody. You can't really want to see them. That's not. This is fairy tale stuff. But I understand now, you know. I understand. You know, so you enjoying the book?
I have been.
Good. And the book is called, do a commercial right here.
Yeah, I regret I didn't do one earlier.
Don't worry about it, man. I got you covered, brother. The name of the book is The Last Hustle. How much you selling this book for, man?
Whatever it says on the back.
Whatever it says on the back. It's a good book. It's a very good read. What happened was I did a speaking engagement one time, and a lady with a lot of money heard me speak and said she would be more than happy to print up 1,000 copies of this book. She printed them up, and I give them to inmates. So we started running out of books to donate to inmates. So that's what I do. I gave 3 books. I went to a machine shop to buy a transmission for a truck, you know. The same truck that the bee stung the head before I went to get it. So that truck cost me a lot of pain. So I said, does that mean I shouldn't get the truck, or what does that mean? You know, here we go. Then we'll start analyzing everything, you know. If you analyze it, they won't do nothing with you. You'll be like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, so you won't do nothing, you know. So anyway, I said, well, you know what? I'm going to get this truck. I've always wanted a truck. I don't care if the truck falls down tomorrow. I'm going to get it. And so what I do, I give the book to those incarcerated. Today, I'm at the place getting a transmission. I pay for the transmission. Walk out the store. These 2 black guys walk up to me. Hey, Kenny, how you doing? How you know me? He said, I was just in your class the other day. I said, Mr. Button, I wonder where you were. Because he went home. He said, and this is Mike Jones. I said, Mike Jones, what do you do? He said, I sell cars. I said, I do too. I said, that's trade numbers. I said, matter of fact, wait a minute, gentlemen. I went and got 1 book and 2 books and this autograph, gave him a book. Then Hollywood was in the back seat. Old drug addict. You could see he was waiting for a shot. Grizzle, one of them old drug addicts. He'd been shooting dope all his life. Man, give me one of them books. Now, I don't know if he's going to read the book or not. Between one of his nods, he said, oh, yeah, The Last Hustle. So I autographed, gave 3 copies to 3 guys, and the one guy was in my program in jail. Isn't that amazing? I mean, the timing of it is amazing. The timing. I mean, I could have waited another 5 minutes, would have missed him. Or they could have waited another, we'd have missed each other. I walked in, and I'm doing something. 2 brothers over there. I would have, because he didn't have orange on. He didn't have a prison suit on, so I didn't recognize him. He was just like me. He says, Kenny, me, what's the button? I said, he looked so old in prison. But then I saw him, he looked young and spry and sprinkly and everything. And so it's really heartening to be able to give this book, this story of transformation and redemption, to those cats who would never read about it. Because most books like mine are called urban books, and they stop with the hustling and the robbing and the killing. And these authors make a lot of money off these stories of pimping and robbing, but they never take the reader through. They leave them in the drugs and the back. Those people are Satan, devils. And I would tell them that. Because they're enslaving people and keeping people in prison for the sake of a dollar. Malcolm X said, God is not a hustle. So whenever you enslave, because I know as I enslave people, I lied, I deceive people for the sake of $2 or $3. Sometimes I still do. When I sell a car, it says, it's a good car. Yeah, it's a real good car. How do I know? That car might blow up the next day. The guy told me, he says, Kenny, this car got the strongest transmission in Sacramento. 50 miles down the road, guess what came up? The check engine light. My buddy run the thing there, it said, transmission problem. He lied. But I know, but that's the car business. Who knows about the car business? Isn't it a con? A sham? You can't trust a car salesman? They would lie to you? So every time I do a business deal with somebody, says, yeah, this is good. I say, oh boy, I know soon I get home, it's going to be at least two things wrong with this car. It always is. So when I buy a car, I walk away saying, I never call the guy back. I never say nothing to him because you know what? He or she going to say whatever it is to get rid of this car while they're selling the car because they know something is wrong with it. It's not new. They're getting rid of it because it's, as my wife said, it's a can of worms.
And the bee.
Can of bees. You gonna get stung? You gonna get stung? As soon as the check-in light came on, I said, I'm not surprised. So whenever I buy a car from somebody, I am not surprised that they're gonna lie. Because they're gonna do whatever they can to what? Move that right on down the road. So I was happy to see these two guys today. You know, one of them's in my program. The other guy does what we do. I can't wait to call them. Say, hey, man, Mike, you know, whatever you need me, man, let me go. Let me know. We'll do something together. You know, I love buying and selling cars. It's kind of fun. You know, that's how I take care of myself. That's how I feed myself. And I hope I can make enough money maybe one day to keep buying books to donate to inmates. You know, that's my one passion is to be able to keep printing these books to give away. Because I just give them to him. You know, it's like Johnny Appleseed. You're sowing seeds. You know, she bought 1,000 books. I think we got about, what, 3 or 4 more boxes left? So 28 in books. We got about maybe 150 books left. So if anybody feels so moved, I'm going to go to China or contact somebody, contact me, see how we get some more books printed. That's my one passion. How can we get more books printed so I can keep giving them away? I work in the San Bruno County Jail. I got a contract for 5 weeks. I'm in my third week, my fourth week. It ends next week. They asked me if I would come back in the same type of setting from 11 o'clock until 3 to work periodically with the men incarcerated. It's the San Francisco Unified School District have a program called 5 Keys. And it's devoted to educating the men and women in jail. Isn't that amazing? So when they come from the streets, they go straight to school. They keep getting educated. They don't lay around and cry and moan. They come in and read and write and arithmetic and restorative justice. So, yes.
And is that mandatory or is that?
Oh, it's mandatory. Mandatory.
So they're doing that throughout.
The San Francisco, and now LA is jumping on board, and also San Diego. Because this is what I said. They said, Kenny, if you had a control of the prison system, what would you do? I said, when they come in, they would be educated on spirituality. They would get the GED. They would be educated. Mm-hmm. So when they walk back out, they're going to walk back the way they came in. it would be a college. It would be a university. It would be an ashram. You get up at 7 in the morning, when you go back to bed, boom. People in the ashram, they be tired.
Yeah.
The guru will get them up at 4 and don't let them go to bed at 4. They get 2 hours of sleep right back in, huh? Ain't that right? And that's what prison should be. There was a, man, I ain't never going to jail again. Man, I got to be educated. I said, right? That ain't no fun. I got to learn stuff. I'm going to stay out here. And I have all the teachers, it's like a long hall. I'm in rooms, 10 rooms, 5 on each side, and they teach physics, ESL, English as a second language, restorative justice, which is me, and business investments. And I said, one guy, he teaches business investments. I said, Dory, how many of your students are going to take, going to come up with $20,000 and go buy a house and get married and do something. How many are going to invest in stocks and bonds? Let's think about that. I said, you should teach them. Use an analogy. You got $20,000, you buy 10 keys of cocaine, you do so and so, so and so and so. You have to teach, you have to show them how it relates. You just can't say, you take your $20,000 and you go to Wall Street and do something. They don't understand that. You got to give them the street language. You got 20 grand, you do it, and you invest, you got 20, now you got $100,000. What are you going to do with the money? Because they have that kind of money, but they don't know what to do with it. What do? They stay in the game, stay in the game, stay in the game, stay in the game, and then they die there. When I was in federal prison, all the cats that was really successful, they might have made $2 or $3 million, and they got to do their time, but they had invested it because they was educated. Federal prisons are much more educated. State prisons are less educated. So what San Francisco is doing, and L.A. is doing, and what San Diego is doing is amazing. Recidivism goes down when you educate a person. This is really simple. Because they're ignorant, they're uneducated, third grade level coming in the hustling out there. But they're very smart, street smarts, but they need education about the arts, about physics, about, you know, they need education. English, grammar. They need it. The reason I'm here with you all because I educated myself. I read books on physics, then metaphysics, and then learning about it. I read Aristotle, I read Diogenes, I read Hamlet, I read all of Shakespeare, Mark Twain, I read all of them. And I was steady expanding my consciousness. I read capitalism, socialism. Oh, I read everything. Mao Zedong, Che Guevara, you know, Machiavelli, I read it all. And I kept educating myself to where I used to educate myself out of prison. Then I finally got to Muktananda, Yogananda. And these cats was like, okay, man, if you want to read minds, if you want to walk through walls, you got to do this. You got to ask for a guru. Where am I? I want my guru. Because I want to walk through walls. I was locked up. Doing 40 years. Hell yeah, I want to walk through that wall. And I did. You'll see, I learned astral projection. So Muktananda was not lying. Yogananda was not lying. Once you have the spiritual awakening, once you wake up and realize you're one with everything, you got everything. That's why I was able to speed, and now have a healthy relationship. Because once you have the awakening experience, it speeds everything up, and you have everything. You have a coat of many colors. You have the gold and the diamonds and the jewels. You got everything because you are everything. But once you have the awakening experience and become baptized in the spirit, then everything is magical. You don't have to do it anymore. Once you have the awakening experience, then you don't need to know how to manifest rocks or manifest this. It happens naturally. Because you experience the ultimate, I am one with all. So since you're one with all, whatever you want, you got. You can know the law of attraction. You can if you want to, you just want to do something with your mind. But you don't need to know it. It just happens. I laid in bed. I said, I'm tired of having all these unhealthy relationships. I want a wife. I want a woman. I want a friend. I want this. And I said, she got to be this. The moment I was making a prayer, Pilar was going to Bali, and I didn't know Bali existed until I got through the prayer there a couple days later. Somebody said, go to Bali. I said, well, where's Bali? What's in Bali?
So I went and looked it on the map and said, well, that's a long ways out. And I called some friends and said, man, what's happening about it? Well, Kenny, the one thing you need to know is condoms. Okay, that's number one. Kenny? And I called another friend and said, man, what about body? Kenny, $6 massages. I said, well, I didn't know about that. So that's advice I got from two people. I get to Bali. I didn't know why I was there. You know, there's a thing called pilgrimage, you know, where you have to go back and give thanks to that which came and got you from hell. I get there, I'm on a motorbike ride. Ride with my consort, whoever she was at the time. We get to this beautiful place called Tampax Arena. I get to Tampax Arena, I look down there, and all these people are bathing in this holy water. I just took my stuff off, ran, and jumped in the water. So I'm bathing too. Then I knew why I came. I came to give thanks to that which came and got me. The ritual, the pilgrimage was complete. And she was there waiting on me. I did a sad thing. She came there. I said, wow, you're pretty, young lady. And that was one meeting. And then about a couple of days later, I saw her again. I said, whoa, you're pretty. And I felt, and I hugged her. And I felt a leap in my heart. Wait a minute here. So I went on, and I saw her again. And the night before I was leaving, we got together and we partied. Had a great time. And I saw, of course, we have a great time with somebody. Says, come up to my room and so we can help me pack my bags, right? That's what you do. I mean, that's just what you do. I mean, that's what I do. She says, you don't want your bags packed tonight. So I'm going to go home. She got her little motor scooter, poof, 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 all the way home. I caught the plane, came back. We started texting and Skyping and each other, and they said, no, boom, boom. Relationship I had here fell apart, boom. And I was steadily turning my attention toward her, she started turning her attention toward me, and I said, oh. Then it hit me. It was like a, come. Have you had one of those downloads where you know everything? I had a download, bam! I said, she's going to come, Jim, she's going to come to America.
I believe you.
And she's going to stay here in America, Leanne. And we're going to have a great time. She is not going back to wherever she thinks she's going back to. Because she's going to be with me. Guess what, Jim?
That's what happened.
She came. I walked up to her. See, now, I was driving to get her from San Francisco to L.A. I was driving.
Your car doesn't make a sound.
It barely made it down there. It blew up on the way back. See, it got me down there. I walked up to her. And I looked at her. And I knew. She had some plan that, well, this is the first night, we're going to walk around the park, then you're going to go home, then you come back the next day. I said, yeah, right. You're not getting out of my sight at all. We went up to our friend's house, we had a nice time, I said, come on, let's go. Got in the car, we drove down to Temecula, my friend's house, and we had our honeymoon there. See, we did our honeymoon, then we got married. We did our honeymoon, then... She went back, got her stuff and body, came back, and I proposed to her on New Year's Eve night. Worst night to propose to her because it wasn't going great. I went to sleep saying she might not marry my butt, so, well. She woke me about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, says, Kenny, I said, yeah. The answer is yes. But she don't say yes, she said yes. She's from Madrid, Spain. So she pronounces her Y as a G. She said, that's Jess. And I said, okay, now kiss him, we're back to sleep. And then we get the kick out of it. And we got married a month later. We was going to get married like this. We said, we're going to go to Santa Rosa Courthouse and have a friend come there for lunch. And we get to just do the quickie. because I had committed to her, you're not leaving America. You stand here, so whatever it takes. See, that's what it took for me to get married. I had to commit to something. I had to something had to force me to commit. So I said, you're not going back, so we're going to figure out this way. Immigration, problem, whatever, we're going to do this. So other thing was this, Jim. We're going to go to San Rosa Courthouse, apply for the marriage certificate, let them do their thing. One of those quickies, you know, one of those courthouse things. The day before, we went over to a friend's house, and I was telling him what our plans for. He says, I'm hurt, Kenny. You have assaulted me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I'm a reverend. I can marry you. I said, well, how can we do this? He said, this is what we can do. We downloaded the plan in a matter of 10, 15 minutes. My wife was in there talking to his wife. When she came back, I said, honey, we're not getting married tomorrow. We're not getting married at the courthouse. We'll get married here. This is how we're going to do it. I didn't have a best man. She didn't have she had a bridesmaid.
You had a bridesmaid?
Yeah, she had a bridesmaid. We made one up. Within a matter of hours, the wedding, everything came together. The next day we got her. She was terrified because her mama and everybody was in Madrid, Spain. So how do we bring this happen? So what we do, we just think something called Skype. Everybody ever heard of Skype?
Oh, yeah.
So we hooked mama up and put Dagger. And so, and our friend Elizabeth was the interpreter. So she was there telling mom what's going on. So now my mom, she's in the bedroom getting dressed up, and I went to Safeway, bought a bouquet, Jim, here's the bouquet and everything. It was a beautiful bouquet, as a matter of fact. We did everything. You know, if you could have spent $50,000 on a wedding, it would have been as good as ours. We had a $100 wedding. But it was the most exquisite, is the most perfect wedding. Why? Because consciousness made it happen. We didn't make it happen. The pastor make it happen. It just downloaded. The whole plan. Everything. I mean, the reception, the dance, I mean, everything. I mean, we didn't even plan this. We was going to Santa Rosa Courthouse, Jim. And here we are. We went yesterday to the tree, didn't we, baby? The oak tree. We got married under an oak tree in Sonoma. A big old beautiful oak tree. We hugged the oak tree yesterday, didn't we, baby? It was a beautiful oak tree. We had been there a while. We were saying, wow, this is where we did it. This is the scene of the crime. Against singlehood. And it was amazing. We ate some berries, didn't we, baby? And a few blackberries that we didn't know that we didn't know they were there. And it was amazing. I mean, I have married someone, I have married two people since then. And I married somebody last year, and I married somebody in her best friend in February. Their wedding didn't touch ours. they spent more money. It didn't touch because it was so just natural. You follow what I'm saying? It just happened. Whenever consciousness makes something happen, you know consciousness make it happen. It is just like this, you know, it just, you can't facsimile consciousness. You can try to. My daughter spent $30,000. She had the big old woman singing for her, and she had all this food. She got out of a Rolls Royce and all that kind of stuff. So what? I had I have one of that? I had a 19, or 2,300. It was perfect. My best man was a drug addict, best friend, crazy guy. He straightened himself up for one day. For one day, he got straight. The next day, he was back to acting crazy again. It was beautiful. We went to the ashram and took pictures. It was a beautiful wedding. The best I ever had. Well, I had one before. And now she is an American citizen. Oh, one last story, then I'm going to stop, okay?
You know about immigration, right? You got to go to sign the paper. It's all a money game, you know, money shuffle. Okay? You put the money, you do this here, and you take the pictures and all that kind of thing. And then they come for the interview. We go to the interview. Now, they was shaky about me because I wasn't making enough money to take care of her. They want to know if she's going to be a ward of the state. So you making enough money. Well, I didn't make any money last year because I was in Bali. I was hanging out. I was trying to be a guru and all that kind of stuff. And so whatever, not making any money. So it said, your income's not enough. So my sister said, I sponsored. So my sister sponsored her. So that's taken care of. Cool. No problem. Okay. Okay, yes. Now you go for the interview. We go for the interview. Sitting there. The guy's asking me. Now, the day before, check this out. I had no job. I get a job 2 weeks, 1 week of 2 weeks before we go for the interview. They send me a check. The invoice come the day before. She just happened, my beautiful, smart, intelligent wife, who's totally connected to consciousness, just picked up a piece of paper, stuck it in her file, and said, I'm going to take this along with me just for the sake of taking it along. We get there, he looked at all the other papers, he says, ah, where do you work, Mr. Johnson? I said, I work at San Bruno County Jail as a counselor. Do you have any kind of paper verifying that and income? My wife says, of course you do. Approved. It was that one little job I got right before. This is consciousness knows everything. Knows everything. It's that everything. You don't have to know nothing but it. You follow what I'm saying, Jim? Just no consciousness. Just no consciousness. And it'll take care of this. I've got mixed up.
Tell us something about the hunger strike. What do you know about it?
Ooh, the hunger strike. Listen, no guys, the prison is the worst. The Pelican Bay is probably the worst prison there is. It's probably the worst prison there is. Pelican Bay. And the inmates are just treated horribly there. They're treated horribly there because they're totally isolated and they are considered the worst of the worst of the gang, the killers and murderers, and so they figure they can do anything to these guys. So these guys have decided to starve themselves. That's the only way you're going to do it. You just got to die. So they're starving themselves. And as you know, you know, you've seen people who have, it speaks about it in the Bible. People go on these 40-day fasts. So once you go there, once you do that, the media comes because you're not supporting the system now. You're dying. In other words, they have transcended, you know, they're not violent anymore. They're no longer violent. I refuse to fight. I refuse to argue. We're not riding anymore. We're just going to lay here and die. They cannot have that. The legal system can't have it. The federal government can't have it, so they got to have room changing. But that's where they have to go, because Pelican Bay is a horrible prison. California prison system is probably one of the most horrible prison systems besides Texas or maybe Louisiana.
Wow.
Yeah. California, you think California is really a prison? California is so backwards when it comes to how they treat human beings incarcerated. Just racism, and they support racism. They want the white guys to be white, they want the Mexicans to be Mexican, they want the blacks to be black, they want y'all to fight amongst each other. So that's why I am grateful to be able to do what I do when I go into jail and tell young men and women, wake up, this is just wake up, get out, don't stay here. Well, what they do then, when they get too weak, they put them on drip. Yeah, because they can't move anymore. They can't resist. So now it's a medical problem, so they have to, you know. So that can't stand. They finally realize that's the only way they're gonna be able to get it. And the ACLU and all these human rights organizations get them running, you know, because they're not doing what they want them to. If you fight and stab and kill, keep me in there. But when people just lying there dying, oh no, this is. Then you get solidarity out here, people refusing to eat. Then down you bring it's only when people out here become supported does it, you know. Because most of people are poor. Most inmates are poor. They have no money. Most of them, well, over 99% of people in prison are poor. Rich don't go to jail. If you got money, you don't go to jail. I mean, Martha Stewart go to jail, but it's, come on. I mean, those few scapegoats that go to jail. But the majority of the rich just don't go to jail. They can kill, they can rape, they don't go to jail. So all people in prison are poor. So let them die. And the media has done such a good job in saying all people who are criminals are no good when they need to be killed and locked away. So people say, out here say, yeah, shit. I got better things to worry about in some kind of bit. He shouldn't have robbed the bank. But any of those people says he shouldn't have done that, and that happened to them, they go one to jail, they be screaming their butts off, come and get, save me. Because you haven't been there. So, we've been on a journey today about attachment, suffering, there's a way out by letting go, and when you do that, you end up in nirvana, or bliss, or a place of joy, of equanimity, or peace, whatever you want to call it. And even the men who are in prison, who are suffering, see, I wouldn't say it if I hadn't been there myself, but I know how it feels to be in prison and be ready to commit suicide and kill yourself. And I went there. I said, this is too much, I'm going to commit suicide. So they're committing suicide. So I know how it feels to be so helpless. You know what? The only way out of this is to die. So I'm going to kill myself. But even those men who are decided to not take food are in service to this truth. Somebody has got to be some people that sacrifice in order to change the system. And guess what? Guess who's doing it? I don't know. Consciousness. It's doing it. It's the guard, it's the inmate, it's the media, it's the judge, it's the lawyer, it's all consciousness play. Suffering lasts only so long. Suffering is temporary. But consciousness is permanent. And now I work for my sponsor. Many Rivers.
That word is thank you.
Yes, thank you, man.
And thank you all for coming tonight.
Yes.
There's several words from the sponsor. The first word is actually, this really is an awesome book.
Mm.
It's a great read.
Yes.
I highly recommend it. You can give it to friends, not having even read it, and you can come back to me and ask for your money back, because I don't think you'll want your money back, or your friends won't want their money back if you give this as a gift to people. It's a fantastic book, and there are some other books here for you to look at as well about the inspiration on the way of your journey, Gangaji.
Mm, yes.
There's also a donation. Basket over there on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it, because we split that donation with our speaker to further his work, and so please give generously. As I said earlier, we'll be having a whole great raft of cool events this month, and come back and join us
for those, and also when the bookshelves are out and you can buy tea and all the great stuff,
all the great
we
stuff
have.
You can do.
And thank you all for participating in this moment of consciousness, and thank you, Kenny, again.
No, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.